What is up, fools? This is the big show, ladies and gentlemen. This is the QTR podcast. It's what you've been waiting for all day. I tell you, I just got a feeling. You've been sitting around at your trading station or at your brokerage office, and you've got Fox Business News on in the background, or you got CNBC on in the background, and all day you're thinking, man, I can't listen to the same shit all day. It's the same stuff. It's the same dog and pony show. I need something different. Well, here I am. The good news is I feel the same way. I wasn't even going to do a podcast today, and then I opened a beer, and all of a sudden, things just changed. One of the many unexplained mysteries of the universe. You know, obviously I'm not an astrophysicist or an astrologer. I can't really tell you how things work, but fate has brought us here together where I am sitting in a desk chair yelling into a microphone and you, well, you're doing, I don't know, whatever it is you're doing, but you're listening. And that's what's important. And let me just go to today's example before I go through my housekeeping. Let me just do the housekeeping first. The housekeeping is I'm not a registered investment advisor. I don't hold any licenses. This is not investment advice. We're just here. We're just talking. It's humorous purposes. We're shooting the shit. Do your research elsewhere, folks. There's really no nice way to say it, aside from you should never take anything that I say seriously, ever. How's that for a disclaimer? Didn't have to hire a lawyer or anything? Didn't have to draft anything up? One sentence. Don't listen to me and don't take anything I have to say seriously. Okay, that is number one. With that out of the way, I would also like to say that today's episode is brought to you by my Patreons. Patreon is a recurring donation service. It allows you to support the QTR podcast for as much or as little as you would like. So if you listen, stoked to have my Patreons on board. I'm going to try and always keep the podcast advertisement free because ads suck and I hate getting them when I watch stuff and they agitate the shit out of me. So if you don't mind and you are kind enough to chill just for a minute, I'm going to shout out a couple of my latest Patreons. Jesse Collins, Peter Masso, Keith Tingle, Calvin Dennison, what is up? Cooper Sinclair, Keith McCutcheon, Sarah Calaf, Chris Ward. You guys are awesome. I appreciate you guys coming through recently. And also, how about Ken Raupack, Chris Boas, Russell Valenti, Arthur Wong, are guys coming through in a huge way for me that have been coming through for a couple months. And I appreciate it very much. Some days I will spend a lot of time on Patreon. Some days I won't. Today, I want to get right in it. I don't want to lose my train of thought. And let's start right here. Okay, obviously, everybody knows what happened today. Today, it was reported by Bloomberg during the middle of the day that Tesla was being criminally probed by the Department of Justice in relation to the tweets that Elon Musk put out in the beginning of August, where he said that he had funding secured for a bid to take the company private at $420 per share. I think we're all on the same page there, folks. There's no need, if you don't know that whole story, you have to go back and read about it or go listen to one of my past podcasts. I'm not really in the mood to explain the whole fucking thing again. The point is, Elon Musk said he had a plan to take the company private at $420 a share, and then all of a sudden he decided 2 weeks later, we're going to keep the company public. All right, that's what happened. In relation to that, it was already disclosed that the SEC was investigating him. And actually, it was reported that the SEC had subpoenaed the company with regard to that. And today, Bloomberg broke the story that the Department of Justice was in the midst of a criminal probe regarding the same thing. So here's where I want to start today. Before I even get into that, let me just address something that happened this afternoon. This afternoon, Ross Gerber, who has been on this podcast and is a well-known Tesla bull, tweeted that he was going to be on CNBC to say his piece. This is after the news broke, okay? The stock was trading higher today, up over 300 again. I think it was at 302 or 303. And the news broke around lunchtime today on the East Coast, at which point the stock was promptly pounded mercilessly down to, I think, about $275 was the low, and then it recovered and subsequently closed in the low $280 range. So the stock sold off relatively significantly on the news, and that's, in my opinion, because the news is meaningful. Later on this afternoon, Ross Gerber tweeted out, hey, I'm going on CNBC, I gotta say my piece about this, whatever, they're bringing me on to talk about it. Now, Ross is a very well-known Tesla bull. As I said, he's been on this podcast before. And what I tweeted in response to Ross was, actually, I retweeted his tweet And what I said was, CNBC, please allow me to phone in and act as a counterpoint to this conversation. Because without coming out up front and saying, look, it's going to be a love fest and Ross is going to say everything's fine when everything obviously isn't fine. Without saying that, I tried to be polite. Let me come on and just make a counterpoint. And I will do it on the fly. And you know what? If he comes on and he says something I agree with, which is like, hey, this isn't good, I'd be like, hey, he's right. This isn't good. But if he said something else that maybe I didn't agree with, maybe like, this is nothing, or it's bullish for the company, which I don't think he said those things verbatim, but it wouldn't have fucking surprised me. I wanted to be there to perhaps rebut those things. Now, is it a surprise to me that CNBC did not reach out to me and have me on? No, it's not. It is a little bit of goofing the floof there a little bit, because it was 10 minutes before the segment. So I know, obviously, in 10 minutes, they're not going to be able to get the producers and people on board to turn around and get a new guest on. Fine, whatever. But Ross's response to me on Twitter was, they don't allow birds on television. I have $840 million under management, and I have 6,400 clients. Something to the tune of, that's why I'm allowed on TV. Okay? So, let me just address that for one second. Much of it reminds me of Tesla. Tesla is at a point now where it's a $50 billion company, and so it becomes inconceivable for people to think that it could fail because the market cap is so large. Putting the balance sheet aside, putting the income statement aside, I can't tell you how many people have said to me over the course of the last couple of months, they're not just going to let a $50 billion company go under. They're not just going to let a $60 billion company go under. Well, that might be the truth. It might be. I mean, there is a certain argument that once you become big enough, you become more difficult to stop. And there's been a lot of frauds that are companies that I believe are fraudulent or companies that are acting nefariously. I'm not going to name names, but there are a lot of companies that have either found loopholes or exploited something in their business plan, and they've used it to become enormous. And then at that point, once they become so big, the lie almost becomes too big to handle, too big for regulators to wrap around, and too big to stop, really. Now, I'm not really referring to Tesla when I talk about that, but the point that I'm making is there is a thought out there that the company is too big to go bankrupt, too big to fail, whatever. Now, along those same lines, there is a line of logic and thinking that says, if you have $840 million under management, or you have $1 billion under management, or $500 million, or you have $2 billion, or you have $100 million, that your opinion and your thought process and your investing acumen and your due diligence is going to be of a higher quality and is going to be more worthwhile to listen to than somebody like myself who is worth really nothing and looks at things a different way. Well, that you can think like that, that's fine. And perhaps that's how CNBC thinks, and perhaps it isn't. I don't really know. Are you more likely to get on CNBC if you have $840 million under management than somebody like myself that still uses a George Foreman grill to cook himself dinner at 35 years old? Probably. You're probably more likely to get on television then. But does that mean anything? Does that mean there's more validity to your argument? I'll give you a perfect example. Before Valiant collapsed, there was a guy on Twitter called AZ Value, and I don't know anything about him. I don't know if he's a successful fund manager or if he's just a regular guy, whatever, but he has this little blog online where he had posted these really comprehensive write-ups about Valiant. He talked about the acquisition accounting. This was before the whole Philidor thing, and he raised all of these red flags, and he did it on this little kind of rinky-dink blog that he has, whatever. And it turns out he was right. He was way ahead of the curve. And he was somebody whose real name I don't know, and who a lot of people's real name don't, they don't know him. And he's somebody who a lot of people probably don't follow on Twitter and probably had never heard of until I mentioned him just now. But the way that these networks should be selecting their participants should be on the validity of their arguments and the acumen with which they understand the circumstances, and not because a guy comes on wearing a nice suit. Now, I realize, look, folks, I'm not going to be able to affect change here. It's been going this way for very long, and when the Center City businessmen go to lunch and they go to their favorite restaurant, which has CNBC on in the background, they like to eat their grilled cheese sandwich and sneak their pint of beer in, watching a guy on television who's sitting there in a suit and looks like he knows what he's doing. He's got a fancy title. It's VP of Finance. It's President of Operations. It's partner. It's founding partner. And the guy tends to look like basically the local weatherman on your normal news station, instead of looking like he slipped out of the seventh circle of tattooed hell, which is pretty much what I look like in the morning. So I get it, okay? Those people, they're very impressed by that, and that probably leads to viewership, and CNBC feels like they need to do that. But anyways, for this guy to go on Twitter and to mouth off to me and say that, oh, well, he's got, you know, this amazing investing track record of 30 years, and he's got 6,400 clients and $840 million under management, and that's why his opinion matters more than mine, that's bullshit, and it's nonsense, all right? But that's fine, okay? Because what happens is, you're here. I mean, I'm not a scientist, but by virtue of the fact that you can hear my voice right now, that means you're listening, right? So you turn to the podcast for one reason or another. Maybe you wanted to laugh. Maybe you feel sorry for me and you just want to feel good about yourself. And you tune in because you're just stoked you found somebody that's more pathetic than you are. Whatever the reason, I don't care. I'm stoked you're here. But you're here for a reason. So when I don't get my chance on network television, that's fine. You're not hurting my feelings by not letting me on CNBC. It's not a goal of mine. You know, I don't remember being in my bedroom at 13 years old and in between fantasies about being the lead singer for Green Day and playing center field for the Philadelphia Phillies. At no point did I think to myself, man, I'd really like to be on CNBC one day, talk about equities. Just never came up. I wasn't a young teenage boy fantasizing about becoming the head of the Federal Reserve someday. And you know what? Not for nothing, but I haven't really grown up too much since then in terms of what my fantasies would be when I get older. I'd still like to be the lead singer of Green Day, and I'd still like to play center field for... I actually still have actual dreams about, like, playing for the Philadelphia Flyers. I had one, like, 3 weeks ago, and I woke up, I'm like, are you kidding me? I did not score the winning goal in the playoffs? That's a true story. That actually happened. I actually had a dream where, like, I scored the winning goal in the playoffs for the Flyers, and I've had dreams like, you know, obviously where I'm dating a sexy woman or I'm playing for Liverpool or something. And there's never any point where I go to bed at night and I have a dream and it's this riveting fantasy where I wake up and I'm in a split screen with Liz Claman talking about the 10-year yield. I don't know, folks. Just call me weird, but just never had those fantasies. So with that out of the way, let's just establish I'm not exactly crestfallen that I'm not on CNBC. But having said that, I will say this. I have carved out a little area for myself on the internet. It's a secret little spot. It exists at quotetheraven.podbean.com and whatever the fucking thing is for my... and youtube.com/y6v lowercase c2984z/$ or whatever my fucking YouTube page is. The point is, folks, I'm on the internet and I'm stoked about it. I have carved out a little spot for myself where, oh, doesn't matter. I get to say whatever I want now. I get to say whatever I want now. No Sarah Eisen, no Wilfred Frost. I actually find both of them quite charming, by the way. Neither one of them. No Ross on the split screen. And no bullshit either. Nobody listening that doesn't want to listen. There's nobody listening this far into the podcast that's not interested in what I have to say. And I'm a realist. I understand not everybody in the world is going to understand or give a shit about what I want to say. Actually, folks, I think we're in the very small minority. If you're listening to this, let's see. I probably have a couple thousand listeners, right? So that's like 0.00000001% of the population. But that's fine. We found our little spot here together. So Now I'm going to say what the fuck I want to say. All right? And here's what the fuck I want to say. This reminds me of, there's a great video of Wally Backman on YouTube. There was an old DVD series called Playing for Peanuts. It was about former baseball player Wally Backman. And he went to manage a baseball team in an independent minor league league that existed for just a year or two down south. And he managed a team called the South Georgia Peanuts. And if you check out the videos on YouTube of Wally Backman, just they have him mic'd up during the season, just flipping out at umpires and flipping out at his team. Well, there's I guess first and foremost, I would suggest watching all of those videos right now. That would be the first thing I would suggest. But the point is, at one point, they lose a game, and he's in the locker room, and he's screaming at his pitchers. He is just, you know, he's like, you guys are pitching like pussies. He's like, you're out there, 1-0 count, 2-0 count, 3-0 count. You know, and then he says something like, find your dicks and get everything together. And then he says to the pitching coach, before he walks out of the room and slams the door, he says, buddy, you say whatever the fuck you want to say. And he slams the door, and that YouTube video ends. And like on the end of many YouTube videos, when they display kind of other links that you might be interested in, this little link pops up at the bottom and it just says, see what the fuck buddy has to say. It's just funny because he leaves. He's like, ah, buddy, say whatever the fuck you want to say. And then the little thing pops up and it says, see what the fuck buddy has to say. Well, here you are. You've clicked on me and now you get to hear what the fuck I have to say. And here it is. If you were stupid enough to believe that Elon Musk was going to take this company private at $420 a share after he put that tweet out, and you did not use the opportunity while the stock was at $380, which was, I don't know, what, maybe a 10-15% arbitrage at its highest point to what a potential takeover price would have been at $420. If you didn't use that opportunity to sell, or at least lighten up a lot of your position, and you bought that Musk had it secured based on that tweet, after all the other nonsense horseshit that has happened this year, maybe, just maybe, you shouldn't be the one on CNBC opining about what the fuck is going on when it's now being reported that that tweet that you bought and then you subsequently tweeted out, it's happening, they're going private at $420 a share. If you bought that line of bullshit, hook, line, and sinker, and it was bullshit, it was fucking bullshit, it was nonsense. And all you need to do is watch what happened in the subsequent days and the subsequent weeks to understand that it was nonsense. The board didn't seem to have any idea what the fuck was going on, okay? And for all intents and purposes, from a public disclosure standpoint, if you say it and you don't have the goods to back it up in an 8K, it's bullshit. It's nonsense. It's not even an MOU. It's not even an LOI. It's just a brain fart. It's just a guy just walking around tweeting out his brain farts. So if you're the person that took that nonsense at face value, forgive me if I happen to think that maybe you shouldn't be the best person to consult when the stock is 100 points lower about what the future is after it's been announced that the company is now the subject not only of a formal SEC investigation involving subpoenas, not only the subject of a formal SEC investigation that was going on before this tweet went out, reportedly about Model 3 production numbers, but also now that the Department of Justice is involved. Did you happen to notice the DOJ is involved? And this guy goes on CNBC and his talking point is, the Department of Justice is looking at a lot of companies. They're looking at Microsoft. They're looking at Qualcomm. When a month ago, you were saying, done deal. Tesla is going private at $420. So why are you the person that gets to go on and talk about it? I mean, look, I know that you manage $840 million, but fuck, you really seem to get something very important kind of wrong. I don't know. And maybe I don't manage anything. Maybe I can't even manage my Madden franchise that I have going right now at 35 years old on my Xbox. I can barely manage my Madden franchise, all right? And I know, I'm not Mr. Big Hedge Fund Manager, all right? I'd like to be gallivanting around Manhattan and San Francisco and LA and fancy cars and all that shit. Folks, do you honestly think if you dropped $20 million in front of me right now that I would, like, do anything different at all? I mean, I think about this all the time. But one of these days, you strike it rich, you'll be the one driving around in a Lamborghini wearing a suit. Have you ever worn a suit? They're fucking uncomfortable, okay? I wear basketball shorts. They're very comfortable. T-shirts, to me, I think those are comfortable. I mean, maybe I'm just old-fashioned, but when I look at videos and photographs of guys gallivanting around with lots of jewelry and fancy suits, I don't go, wow, that guy's rich. I'm like, I would never fucking wear that. That looks uncomfortable. And that guy seems like kind of a douche. I don't know. He's got $20 million. Great. I'm going to nickname him the $20 million douche. I mean, none of that stuff means anything to me. I don't really think about that stuff the same way I don't think about whether or not how much money I'm running is determining how valid the points are that I'm making. Because while CNBC was pumping the narrative of Elon Musk is a great short buster, shorts really have a tough time with it, whatever Kramer was saying, shorts have a tough time with Elon Musk. They may have met the immovable object in Elon Musk, and he did this big thing, and they put a picture of Elon Musk in a Ghostbusters uniform up, and it said Shortbusters behind him. It was like one day after Jim Cramer came out and said Elon Musk is the immovable object for short sellers that he did this stupid thing. And 3 weeks later, Cramer is saying, well, I think it's obvious to everybody he needs a mental health break, and well, I hope he gets better. He should really take a break. That's not what you were saying 3 weeks ago when the stock was at 350 or 360. You were praising Elon Musk. You were praising his ability to deftly defend against short sellers. And now it's, well, I hope he gets better. Clearly something's wrong here. It's very clear to me. It's very clear to me something's wrong here. Meanwhile, the other one, who, you know, Cramer, at least I give him some credit for going on the record and saying, okay, he needs to take a mental health break or whatever the fuck he said, medical leave, whatever. At least he said that. The other one who was telling you that 420 was definitely happening and the company was going private and that he was going to either participate in a special purpose vehicle that they put together or was going to launch some kind of protest because 420 wasn't enough money for a going private offer is now on TV trying to explain why it's not a big deal that there's now a criminal probe into his statements. I mean, folks, do you find that hilarious? I mean, I feel like I'm taking fucking crazy pills, right? Puts the tweet out. Funding secured. CNBC, everybody talks it up. Funding secured, whatever. He's the short buster. Let's bring Gerber on. Let's bring this guy on. Let's talk about it. Maybe they're going private. Maybe they won't. At the same time, short seller skeptics, even some analysts, even some sell side analysts came out and said, look, you know, we don't really think that there's a possibility of this happening. Or they were nice. They said, you know, an under 50% chance that this was going to happen. But the narrative continued for a couple weeks, and news reporters were diligently trying to find out what the board knew and when they knew it. And all of a sudden, it started to kind of unravel one day at a time, one little interesting fact at a time, like they hadn't hired advisors. Huh, kind of important. Or maybe that the board didn't really seem to know what was going on. Oh, kind of important when you tell the whole world you got to bid for the company. I mean, folks, call me old-fashioned, but isn't that normally how it works? Meanwhile, at the beginning of August, when this happened, on August 9th, I did a podcast and said something to the tune of, wow, this is interesting. It's my personal opinion that this is probably not going to happen. And also, it seems like the board doesn't have any clue what's going on. Here we are, a month and 9 days later, whatever it is. Kimball Musk gives an interview yesterday on CNBC where they start asking him questions about these things, and he repeats the same line about deliveries and how he has faith in his brother, the same way that Marco Rubio repeated himself at that debate. Remember with Chris Christie? Barack Obama, let's dispense with this notion that Barack Obama doesn't know what he's doing. He knows exactly what he's doing. And Chris Christie was like, hey, he's repeating himself. And he was like, that's ridiculous. And by the way, let's dispense with this notion that Barack Obama doesn't know what he's doing. He knows exactly what he's doing. And Chris Christie was like, dude, you're just fucking repeating yourself again. And he's like, what are you talking about? And let's dispense with this notion that Barack Obama doesn't know what he's doing. He knows exactly what he's doing. You remember watching that live? Like, what the fuck is wrong with Marco Rubio? Well, that's the same way I felt about Kimball Musk yesterday, repeating the same answer. Kimball, what about this tweet? Sure seems to have gotten you in a heap of trouble. Word on the street is the SEC is formally investigating your company.
Well, I have a lot of confidence in my brother, and really looking forward to that delivery number coming up this quarter.
Yes, very nice, Kimball, but it does seem that the board may be on a different page as the company. You know, as a board member, what can you say about the conduct of your brother on social media and in other places?
Well, I really support my brother, and I'm looking forward to deliveries.
Great, Kimball, but there has been an increased amount of scrutiny on the company, and it's been noted in the media that you guys may need to raise cash soon. How do you plan on doing that if there's an investigation taking place?
Well, I really support my brother, and looking forward to the delivery number coming out.
And then the Longs watch that, and they're like, yeah, this guy makes sense. This guy makes a lot of fucking sense, ladies and gentlemen. This is just straight up 2 plus 2 equals 4. Just playing small ball here. Blocking and tackling, can of corn, no problem. Typical board member response. Looks good to me. Everything looks good. That's my board member right there on television, wearing a cowboy hat. Sure, he's the brother of the CEO. Perfectly normal behavior. That's all fine with me. And then, like I said, you know, after the funding secured stuff comes out, I write an article. And by the way, this is not me trying to take a victory lap or sing my own praises. I'm just trying to lay out some facts here objectively. I could care less about that stuff. So at the same time, Bulls are telling you that 420 is happening and it's an open and shut case, and if you're not buying the stock at 360, 340, 370, 350, you're an idiot because you're guaranteed to have a 420 bid under the stock. I write an article on the 8th of August called After Musk Go Private Tweet, There's Only One Thing That Matters for Tesla. And the third bullet point down in the summary says, the only one thing that matters is whether or not Musk can prove funding was secured. And you can read the article. It is on Seeking Alpha. And here's what I wrote. This is August 8th. And I'm sorry if you read this already and I'm repeating myself, but this is what I wrote. There's already been a good number of articles on Seeking Alpha that guess as to the legitimacy of the tweet, as well as why it may have been timed when it was. I'm not here to comment on that today. I'm here only to comment on one thing that matters regarding the entire situation. And then in bold, can Musk prove and put into an 8K filing that funding has been secured? Regardless of whether or not Musk truly intends on taking the company private, the only thing investors should be watching for over the next few days is whether or not the company files Form 8K with the Securities and Exchange Commission, disclosing the details of the secured funds that Musk claimed to have had in his tweet. The way that this potential going private transaction was disclosed was irregular. Most times, companies go to their board and then carefully put out a press release and a disclosure announcing the details of such a potential transaction. Today, Elon Musk tweeted out the alleged proposed offer, very scarce on details, but for the fact that he stated funding had been secured. Then the stock was halted. Then the company released a statement that didn't have any details about the potential funding. From there, I go on to say that if it can't be proven that funding was secured, that the company is opening itself up to regulatory scrutiny and to legal action. Okay, that's what I said on the 8th of August. On the 9th of August, Ross Gerber tweeted out the following, quote, this is not fake. This is real. Tesla is going private at $420 per share. Okay, so One of us said that potential regulatory and legal action could happen, and the other one said the company's going private at $420 a share. And here we are, 1 month and 9 days later, and the company has not gone private. The stock price has gone down $100 per share, basically, from where it was, about a little bit less than $100 per share, on a disclosure that the Department of Justice has been, whatever you want to call it, probing, informally talking to. Tesla said, hey, we went out for coffee once or whatever. By the way, nobody seemed to point out the fact that this happened a month ago. It appears that a month ago they started volunteering information to the Department of Justice, and they're only making the disclosure now. Tesla's statement today says the following, quote, last month, following Elon's announcement that he was considering taking the company private, Tesla received a voluntary request for documents from the Department of Justice and has been cooperative in responding to it. So a month ago, the Department of Justice asked for documents and the company gave it to him, and you've heard nothing about it. A month ago. Last month, actually. This is not a month ago, but at some point last month. And now the company says something. Oh, by the way, now that Bloomberg brings it up, surely we can mention quickly. We had a little, we went out for coffee. We handed him a little folder of documents. That was it. I'm sure nothing will come of it. Now, I'm not here to take a victory lap and say, oh, I'm right. He was wrong. But what I am saying is, no matter how much money this guy has under management, is it really that fucking laughable that I would be allowed to come on and rebut him? I don't even care. It doesn't need to be me. This is not a take the spotlight type moment. I could care less if it's me. But have somebody on to rebut him. They had a guy on today that was very soft-spoken, obviously wasn't familiar with Ross. Let him go on a couple of things. But I tell you what, when you say something like you said on the 9th, that this is not fake, this is real, they're going private for $420 a share, and I say, if they're wrong, could be a regulatory problem, and a month and 9 days later, we're sitting around discussing how the Department of Justice is criminally probing the company or informally probing the company for criminal wrongdoing or whatever the fuck you want to call it. If that's the case, maybe try not to make the argument that you should have the spotlight because you've got more money than I do. Because people are interested in the facts. Doesn't really matter who presents them. I say this all the time. If I'm looking at an investment thesis, I want to check the facts myself, no matter who gives them to me. And the truth will stand on its own, and shit that is not the truth will not be considered. And that's it. When you're looking at a potential investment, you're just trying to narrow down the facts, no matter where you get them from. A fact is a fact. Doesn't matter if somebody sends it to me in a PDF in a Goldman Sachs report, or if I read it while I'm sitting on the beach and somebody flies it over the ocean on one of those planes with the big banners on it. Doesn't really matter. If it's a fact, it's a fact. So what I'm trying to do is argue the facts and trying to argue common sense. The fact that I'm not the head of a financial advisory firm or a major hedge fund is irrelevant. And I know it's irrelevant because you're interested in the other side of the story, which is why you're here listening to it. So in the future, if you're such a fucking bigwig hotshot Mr. Wall Street guy, then maybe you shouldn't bother with talking to little old me. That's fine. And if you're CNBC, you don't have to bring me on. I don't care. But maybe you want to reconsider who you do bring on to make the bull case. First choice on my speed dial would not be the guy who said the company's definitely going private at $420 a share. But that's just me, folks. That's just me. It's all right. All it does is just drive people to my podcast in droves. I used to wonder how I could have hundreds of thousands of listens just doing this for 6 months. Now it's all starting to make sense to me. I mean, maybe people aren't interested in me. Maybe they're just interested in hearing the truth. Maybe they're just interested in hearing an angle to the story that they don't hear on the major news networks. I don't know. Either way, look, I got something possibly brewing for later this week. And it would be fantastic if it happens. I will keep you posted on my Twitter, and my Patreons will probably know first. But could be big things brewing for the QTR podcast coming up. Also, I'm going to be speaking in Vegas at the Traders for a Cause conference alongside of some heavyweights in the industry, guys who are smarter than me and have much more money than I have. Incidentally, one fund manager with $840 million under management was not invited to speak at this conference. If you're looking for me, I'll be the only presenter that brings his mimosa on stage at 10 o'clock in the morning. It's a tradition I've kept going for 3 years now. And Traders for a Cause is really an awesome event. It is 3 or 4 days, and most of the time I hate these conferences. I really do. They're stuffy, and they're fucking boring, and they're just agitating. But this one is for a great cause, and it's literally 3 or 4 days of awesome events. It includes like a golf outing, and then the conference is the next day. Then we always go to this Mexican place called Cayo in Vegas. That's fantastic. Everybody just basically hangs out and drinks tequila, talks about trading. And John Najarian was there last year. Super nice guy. I think there's a couple guys coming from CNBC this year. Should really be fantastic. And it's all for a great cause. So if you want more information on it, check out Traders, the number 4acause, .org. Is it .org? I really should have this shit together before I start the podcast. Yeah, tradersforacause.org. You can sign up there still. They have raised over $700,000 to date over the last couple of years, run by some nice people and for a good cause. And it is October 12th through 14th in Las Vegas. Hopefully I will catch you there. But for now, I am out of here. Peace!